Jordan, mission protocol says you have to give the word. Jordan waved one hand in the air. By all means, start the countdown. Okay, said Hazard. Countdown clock is started. You launch in 3 minutes. And counting. Jordan sank back into the chair's padding and squirmed a little to make the safety harness clasping his shoulders more comfortable. He glanced at Brandon, who was staring straight ahead. Pretending to be a spaceship captain, Jordan thought, smiling inwardly. Bran will never grow up. Not completely. That's my department. I'm the sober brother, all grown up and serious. He's still something of a boy. Pumping out hangar deck, Hazard's voice stated flatly. Inside the cockpit, they barely heard the clatter of the pumps sucking the air out of the hangar. Jordan felt himself tensing, though. Excitement, fear, wonder, worry. All of them bubbling inside him. Rotating, said Hazard. The rocket plane turned slowly toward the airlock hatch. Out of the corner of his eye, Jordan saw his brother lick his lips. Opening airlock hatch, Hazard announced. The massive hatch slid open silently. Jordan saw the infinite darkness of space, speckled by bright, unblinking stars. Where's the planet? He wondered. Launch in 15 seconds. As the synthesized voice of the automated countdown system ticked off the seconds, the rocket plane rolled to the edge of the open hatch. Despite himself, Jordan tensed in his chair. Then the rocket engine roared to life, and Jordan felt a hard, firm push against his back. The rocket plane flung itself out of the hangar and into empty space. The Moon. Then mighty Achilles prayed to his mother, Thetis, the silver-footed. Mother, my lifetime is destined to be so brief that ever-living Zeus, sky-thunderer, owes me a worthier prize of glory. Homer, the Iliad. Anita Halleck. Given the choice between long life and glory, Anita Halleck chose long life. She was more than halfway through the second century of her life as she stood beneath the glass-steel dome of the observatory atop Mount Jaeger, staring wistfully at the Earth. The observatory was an empty shell now, a tourist attraction instead of a working astronomical facility, little more than a transparent dome and a set of plush couches ringing the circumference of the circular chamber, with virtual reality rigs for tourist visitors dotting its floor. Almost all of the astronomical studies undertaken on the Moon were done at the Farside Observatory, which Halleck had been briefly involved with many years earlier. The lunar nation of Selene lay buried beneath the worn, slumped mountains that circled the giant walled plains of Alphonsus. Above the barren, airless, pockmarked plain hung the glorious blue and white globe of Earth, more than half full at the moment, a glowing beacon of life and warmth set in the dark and sterile depths of space. Halleck sighed inwardly. Nearly a century earlier, she had opted to have her body filled with therapeutic nanomachines, virus-sized mechanisms that destroyed invading bacteria and viruses, cleansed her blood vessels of dangerous plaque, rebuilt damaged cells, acted as a superhumanly efficient immune system to protect and preserve her body. The result was long life. Despite her years, Halleck was as tall and youthful as she had been a century earlier, slim-waisted and long-legged, with a long sweep of chestnut hair draped dramatically over one shoulder and falling halfway down to her belt. But the cost was to be exiled from Earth, never permitted to set foot on the planet of her birth, the world of humankind's origin. Nanotechnology was totally banned on Earth. No one carrying nanomachines in her body was allowed even to visit. More than 20 billion people crammed in there, Halleck thought. How many crazies, how many fanatics, how many idiots who could turn nanomachines into an unstoppable plague that would destroy everyone and everything. No wonder they banned nanotech. And now the second phase of the greenhouse warming was sweeping across the world, drowning cities, reshaping continents, killing millions, and driving still more millions into refugee camps or aimless migrations across what was left of civilization. It's beautiful, isn't it? Startled, she turned to see Douglas Stavanger smiling at her. Like her, Stavanger's body was filled with nanomachines. Like her, he appeared strong and youthful, a handsome man of middle years, broad of shoulder and flat in the middle. Unlike her, Stavanger had filled his long life with service to the city-state of Cellini, first as head of its governing council, later as the Eminence Gris, who gently but firmly pulled the strings behind the scenes. "I don't know why I torture myself staring at it," Halleck admitted. Stavanger cocked his head slightly to one side, his version of a shrug. "It's home," he said. "It always will be, no matter how long we stay away." She knew that he had not made his way to this observatory and bumped into her by accident. "Felicia Ionescu called on me this morning. She's coming here to Cellini," she said. Stavanger said, "So I heard. She wants to get the second mission to Sirius C funded." With the ghost of a smile, Stavanger said, "I wish her well, but..." He let the thought dangle, unspoken. "Chang is dead set against it," Halleck said, knowing that she was telling Stavanger a fact he already knew. "He has a lot of responsibilities on his hands," said Stavanger. "I don't know what Ionescu thinks I can do," Halleck said. "I haven't been active in IAA affairs for years. Decades." For a couple of heartbeats, Stavanger said nothing. "Then maybe she thinks you could help." Halleck shook her head. "It'd be foolish to send the backup mission before we hear from the first team. And that won't happen for another 8 years." "Still," Stavanger said mildly, "it would take 8 years or more to get the next mission ready to go." Halleck walked across the observatory's empty floor, her steps clicking on the concrete, and sat wearily on one of the couches. Stavanger followed her, almost silent in his soft boots. "Scientists," she said, almost scoffing. "They're always pushing for more."
"It's a big universe," said Stavanger.
"But what good is it?" she demanded. "What does it accomplish? So they explore another planet. Does that help anybody? Does that solve any real problems?" Stavanger looked amused. "Strange question to ask, here, in this place." "You mean on the moon? So what? So we're living on the moon. What of it? We wouldn't be here if scientists hadn't pushed to explore." She looked into his handsome, fine-boned face and saw that he was amused and dead serious. "You think they should start a backup mission now, with all the problems on Earth, the flooding and all?"
"There are always problems on Earth, and here in Cellini, too. That shouldn't stop our push to explore."
"Where will it end?"
"It won't end. We keep on exploring, keep on learning. That's where new knowledge comes from, the frontier. And new knowledge always leads to new wealth, new benefits for everyone."
"Very philanthropic."
"Very practical," Stavanger corrected.
"Ionescu will never be able to convince Chang and the others."
"That's why you've got to help her."
"Me?"
"You. You know the political ropes. You have the energy and the drive. Do you have the guts to get back into the fight?"
Halleck stared at him. Stavanger added, "What good is long life if you don't work for something worth doing?" Encounter. It's only fully modern humans, not Neanderthals, who start this thing of venturing out on the ocean where you don't see land. Part of that is technology, of course. You have to have ships to do it. But there is also, I like to think or say, some madness there. You know, how many people must have sailed out and vanished on the Pacific before you found Easter Island? I mean, it's ridiculous. And why do you do that? Is it for glory? For immortality? For curiosity? And now we go to Mars. We never stop.
Svante Paabo, Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology, Leipzig, Germany.
Landing. All feeling of weight dwindled away as the winged rocket plane established a tight orbit around Sirius C. Jordan's eyes flicked from the windscreen to the displays on the control panel while he struggled to keep his stomach from floating up into his throat. Sirius C loomed huge and lushly green outside, sliding majestically below them. We're approaching